Okay, Hare Krishna, I understand the problem too, because when I was trying to get in and dialing in the access code, the computer in America wasn't even hearing all the digits, and they would repeat back to me which digits they heard. So I understand it's quite broken up, but I got in again. Rati, is it a little bit better now?
You sound great now, Maharaj.
Okay, it's okay. I'll try to make something out of it, but you know, it's really bad now with phones here.
And we're at the mercy of Govardhan.
What?
We're at the mercy of Govardhan.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? For 6 months before the phones came on, 4 days before I came to Govardhan. And it's only because Dermot, the devotee here that's working it, was just, you know, because there's so few people out here that have phones, so when it breaks down, they can care less. Anyway, I'll try to, it'll probably go off. But I was presenting that, you know, in the presentation of karma, they described, you know, good and bad experiences. But they're describing the causes of this Kriya Yoga. This yoga of action is meant to bring you to the platform of meditative absorption, where the process of yogic purification can actually work. You can actually control the mind and bring the mind to a platform of sattva that will give it the attachment and discriminative ability to realize the soul different than the body, which is the purpose of yoga. So in describing the foundational causes, describing that meditative absorption, process of meditative absorption requires such a high degree of sattva, the practice is to come to that platform, which takes the yoga of action, which is Kriya Yoga, which consists of austerity, swadhyaya, study, and Ishvara Pranidhana, dedicating your life to God. And by that process, these kleshas are destroyed. The fundamental conceptions that bind you to the body and are the source of all your torment. And in that discussion of kleshas, it describes exactly how it causes karma, and that karma is good and bad. So the Pantanjali, not wanting anyone to have the false conception that the pursuit of pleasure through piety, through good karma, is a fitting goal of life, and he begins to describe how all is suffering, even pleasure. And now, the part I was trying to describe and I was elaborating on, which probably wasn't heard too clearly, is all spiritual texts understand what material consciousness is. They understand that fundamentally, people are focused on their own desires and the fulfillment of those desires as their goal. And the fulfillment of their material desires as their goal. And I was describing how a spiritual process, one of the first things it does is have you focus on the desires of others rather than your own. You have two choices, basically, in seeing the world. Should I see the world through my desires, or should I see the world through the desires of another? I was describing, therefore, this book I was reading about mantra chanting, one of the 10 things that they recommended, that one who wants to chant mantras effectively has to see... has to put others before themselves. Even the fundamental spiritual platform of compassion is taking us out of that egotistical conception by seeing someone else's suffering as primary. generally, we're only seeing, oh, I'm suffering. We don't feel the suffering of others. And therefore, we don't gear our life towards others' desires. So it's a fundamental principle. That's why even in Buddhism, there's such a focus on that. And even Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Jiva Doi, Krishna Nam, Sarva Dharma, that the essence of all religion, Jiva Doi, is compassion to the living entities. Of course, in the process of bhakti, it's by giving them the name of God. Kaler Doshe Nidhe Rajan Eko Asti Mahagunan Kirtanadeva Krishna Syam Mukta Sangam Param Vijay. That there's one good quality in this age, that this can actually give this liberation, this separation. This is the cause of suffering. It's identification. Again and again, in spiritual texts, it's gonna reveal that the suffering is actually external to you. It's happening in something else, and because of your identification, you're suffering. You're not really suffering. You are and you're not. It's just like the child, the pot of water, and the child gets a pot of water and he thinks he has the moon, and then because he's a child, he can't hold the pot steady, and the water ripples, and he thinks the moon is shaking, and he becomes fearful. So he's suffering, but the cause of suffering is unreal. Same thing, the classic example, you're in the forest, and you see there's a rope, and because it's dark, you see it as a snake, and you fear for your life, but the cause is not the snake. There's no real cause for your suffering, except for your misidentification. So spiritual life means to free one from this misidentification with the body. That's the cause of suffering. And therefore, even piety, which gives so-called pleasure, is actually suffering because it attaches you more to the body, and therefore actually increases your suffering. Very interesting statement was made in one of the commentaries here, which it says, a small amount of suffering is in fact is felt more than an abundance. A small amount of suffering is felt more than an abundance of pleasure. So the pleasure you get increases the suffering, which is felt more. So actually it's suffering. It's actually suffering. One absorbs himself in illicit sex life, intoxication, material pursuits. It solidifies the identification with the body and therefore increases the pain, which is felt more. So therefore, all spiritual teachings give this kind of revelation that the pursuit of pleasure is not a fitting goal of life. And I did make the distinction that the Shastras recommend pleasure that we can enjoy to live, but not live to enjoy. We can take what we need to be stable in the higher pursuit of life, but that should not be our objective. And so deeply, if we do the inner work, we see how much that is our objective and how much we're focused on our desires and how much we see the world in relationship to those desires. So spiritual life and spiritual teachings, and it's there in all traditions, has to destroy this misconception by the torchlight of knowledge, by the weapon of detachment, has to destroy it. I was just thinking in Puranas, spiritual histories, because when, in Indian tradition, when history is told, it's told in the terms of the spiritual lessons of history. And for a Purana to be authorized, it must discuss the dynasty of the kings. Well, for the specific reason is the kings have the highest pleasure. And therefore, subtly, that is our aspiration. That's why people watch the movies and they glorify movies. Why? Because they're enjoying more. Wealthy people, they're enjoying more. But actually speaking, they're suffering more. Because that enjoyment binds them to the body, and therefore they experience the suffering transformations of the body more. And therefore, ironically, the societies, the countries with the highest degree of material promiscuity have the highest suicide rate. And probably the suicide rate among the very wealthy is even more than the simple people, the poor. They have these happiness indexes. And sometimes they find that the countries with the lowest standard of living have the happiest people. I went to Vrindavan, had to do some work in Vrindavan, which when you're doing this kartik and you're chanting and hearing, it's such just to drive in there and do the work. But on my way, it was the day of the Mathura Vrindavan Parikrama. That's 50 kilometers. That's two Govardhan Parikramas. And practically, you saw the whole of Mathura and Vrindavan on that path. I mean, that's a 50-kilometer walk, old people. I saw a young man proudly carrying his son for 50 kilometers, and they're walking, and these are ordinary people. It's not just sadhus. In fact, the person who is the chokidar, I mean, the gate man at the house in Vrindavan I stayed, and he's actually a great Vaishnava, actually. He does so much service to me, happily. He's so blissful. He said, "May I go now? It's 4 o'clock. I said, "Yes." He said, "I'm going on parikrama." He's going to start at 4 o'clock. And therefore, people perform this simple life and they perform austerity. They become detached from the body. Because when you perform austerity, simple austerity, not cruel or arduous, when you perform simple austerity, just like right now, somehow in the house, the little couture, what I have here, the hot water hasn't been installed yet, so I take cold bath in the morning. And it's nice. It actually makes you happy because you have to extract when you perform some simplicity, where there's a little difficulty in terms of the body, the consciousness becomes extracted from the body because of the difficulty. And therefore, even though there's a little suffering, a little displeasure, the result is you become more detached from the body and therefore experience the suffering less. So therefore, Patanjali explains how a person of discrimination understands this, that even pleasure is suffering because it binds the soul. And it increases the desires, and actually it's those desires or that hunger for material pleasure that's actually suffering. So you're actually increasing the suffering, and you're causing karma, and to fulfill that suffering There has to be some degree of aggression, which is unfulfilling for the soul and which binds one in karma, and it promotes the ignorance, which is the cause. And then he says that suffering that is yet to manifest is to be avoided. And these are verses we did. Because the past suffering already happened. The suffering you're experiencing now, if there's some, whatever it is, some infection or some breakup of relationship or something, that's already happened. So a person of discrimination is very sensitive to the future suffering. He realizes that the suffering he's experiencing now is caused by his past activities, and therefore he's very, very sensitive to the suffering in the future, and realizes that one of the contributing causes to suffering in the future is indulgence. Not satisfaction of the senses, but indulgence. Taking more than you need. And he's really focused on that. He's so conscious on that. It was described like the eyeball is the part of the body that's sensitive even to a hair. So the yogi is like the eyeball. We're like the body. We're not sensitive to the hairs. The eyeball is very sensitive. With that, the yogis are sensitive. This will cause suffering. You'll see, a person who actually is discriminatory, he's very careful with the decisions he makes, because he understands that the decisions he makes determines his fate or his future. So he's very, very careful about that. And therefore, he understands that the absolute removal of future suffering can be attained only by liberation. So his goal becomes this liberation. And then it describes the cause of that suffering, and it sums it up, is this identification, where you're seeing the mind as the self. And it's describing that all the suffering is happening in the mind. And therefore, a yogi can extract himself from that identification and doesn't suffer. He can extract himself because it's just a mental consideration. It's such a powerful mental consideration that it seems it's real. But we have some experience of that here in this world. The same suffering one person feels more than another. Why? Because of certain identification. And I had an experience of that once. When I was living in Vrindavan in the early, late 70s, early 80s, I mean, there was no way to counteract the elements. When it was cold. When it was hot, it was hot. You basically had to do a lot of toleration. The winter, ice-cold showers in the middle of the winter, the room had no heat. It was a simple life. But I realized by living that type of life, where you're not constantly adjusting, I'm a little bit, you know, cold, you know, turn up the heat, I'm a little bit hot. Of course, there's yukta vairagya. We need it for our health, we need it for our sanity, et cetera. I realized that. But at that time, it was just a very simple life. It wasn't all this adjustment constantly, your hands on the thermostat, your hand on the heater. It was a simple life. And I realized that type of toleration extracted me from the body. And I remember to a certain extent, when I went to the West, I saw how much more I was able to tolerate. You know, the example is even when I went to the dentist, my father was taking me, and the dentist was drilling. And at that time, you know, they didn't shoot me at Novocaine. So you had to, you know, And the dentist just told me to hold his hand and press when there was too much pain. And he was shocked at the degree of toleration. So, same pain. And then there's a degree of absolute toleration where one actually becomes complete. He's just observing. He's not experiencing. He may have just observed. And I think one of the best examples is like a dream. There's so many things that happen. There's suffering, but the suffering is not happening. It's just a dream. You're suffering, fear, being eaten by a tiger, but that's not actually happening to you. So the concept is that this soul, it's not actually happening to the soul. And therefore, spiritual life means to come to that platform. And then, and then today's verse, it just got me off. I had to give two introductions. That which is knowable, so it describes what the previous cause of seeing is the seer or the soul, and the conjunction between the soul and that which is seen is the cause of suffering. That which you are observing, you think is you, and therefore you suffer. You know, boom, your car gets hit. You hit me. The car is the scene, but because the seer is identifying with the scene, it suffers. So now it's going to strike, what is the knowable, or what is the scene, or the drishna? What is this manifest world which is not you, but you are identifying with, and therefore suffering? And why does it exist? So it says, that which is knowable has the nature of illumination, activity, and inertia. So basically, everything has the nature of goodness, which gives light, passion, which inspires activity, and ignorance, which restricts activity and restricts illumination. And that which is seen, or that which is you are identifying with, it consists of the senses and the material elements. So both the instrument of the senses and that which the senses perceive, that's what the manifest world is. And that exists, this whole thing exists for the purpose of providing one of two things. Either to give you liberation, the material world exists either for liberation, or to give you some type of experience and enjoyment and suffering, which is indirectly connected to liberation. Because that experience of enjoyment and suffering is ultimately frustrating. Your experience, you see, because they mention whether it's good or bad experience, it's actually all suffering. And therefore, if you're going to enjoy the material world, that experience is meant to liberate you. That's described. It was actually described in a very interesting way, if I can find it. It says, I'll read one purport. It says, a further result of the pursuit of pleasure and avoidance of pain, says Vyasa, is that it inevitably causes, that's not it. Maybe here. Okay, here it is. One might ask, without an experience of the world that is frustrating on some level, what would motivate one to seek fulfillment elsewhere and take up the rigors and challenges of the yoga path. If one perceives the world of experience as a jolly fine place in which to be, why would one wish to seek a higher truth? From this perspective, a recognition of the world as a place of suffering is actually a preliminary realization for the path of yoga, or it might be argued, for any serious spiritual practice, as indicated in the Saṅkhya Karika quote above. The Saṅkhya Karika states in the first verse, because of the torment of the threefold miseries, the desire to know the means of counteracting them arises. So, so that which is knowable, everything is composed of these modes. Everything. So, what is the knowable? This never-ending flux of the modes, which is everything. It's your senses are in the modes, your mind is in the modes, the elements are in the modes, but that is all what the soul is seeing. It's not the soul. It's a material fluctuation. And why is it moving like that? It's moving like that to fulfill your desires, because the modes are in different... There's three ways to enjoy the world, selfishly in one sense, through inactivity, like we like to enjoy sleep, through fulfillment of material desires, through activity, passion, and through peacefulness. So the three modes give you a variety of experiences of enjoyment in this world. And that's one of the purposes of it, which ultimately leads to some type of frustration. So one in this world has this unlimited experience. Can you hear me? Is it okay?
We can hear you fine, Maharaj.
Okay, good. Let me just read from the purport to give you an idea of what he's talking about, and then I'll stop for questions and see if there's any friends out there that wither the storm of a bad connection. Patanjali here describes the ultimate metaphysical ingredients of the seen, drishta, the manifest world, and states its ultimate purpose for existing. The commentators correlate the illumination prakash noted here with sattva, activity, kriya, and with rajas, all movement and effort, and inertia, stithi, with tamas, ignorance. These three gunas are always in flux as long as the world manifests, and their nature is to assert themselves in various proportions and then ebb away. This gives rise to ever-changing world of manifest forms. Although one or the other of the three gunas appear dominant and the other secondary at any given moment, the presence of the secondary gunas can always be detected. There's never any pure mode in the material world. Even goodness is mixed, because we become attached to goodness, and attachment is passion. And therefore, we fight for our goodness. We fight for our peace. The never-ending flux is what is called the known, says Vyas, and it transforms itself in both the elements and the senses which view the elements. As the former, as the elements, it manifests subtly as the elements sound and grossly as earth, or of the elements. And as the latter, or the senses, it manifests subtly as hearing and the intelligence, ego. So everything is composed of these three modes. Let me give an example. Hariharananda correlates sattva with the knowledge or awareness aspect of an entity, such as a tree's impulse to the source of life. The tree there's goodness, it has awareness, oh, the light, maybe it moves towards the light. And then Rajas is there, because Rajas is the fact of the cause, activity, emotion. So a tree grows towards the light. So it has an awareness, and then it has an activity. And Tamas, when the potentiality is retained, restored, such as the winter season, it hibernates. So its potentiality for light and activity then becomes unmanifest. So as noted, these good pervade all manifest reality, whether the nature of the instruments or organs of cognition, such as the ear, or the graha, the objects of cognition, such as sound. Everything other than the soul itself is composed of these modes, gunas. So this is the idea. Everything is composed of that for this purpose, to give us experience. Even it's described as one process of liberation where you indirectly proceed through the universe and you know, you finally go to the spiritual world. So it says the first layer is the grossest layer, it's the earth, and then each layer is 10 times bigger, so the earth is fragrance. So you go through almost like a personal path, but goes through the earth, and he's confronted with fragrance, which inspires his desire that I want to be the enjoyer and controller, selfish. He has to get through that. Then earth, water, taste. He goes through the world of taste, and he has to transcend it. That the purpose of life is not just me as the enjoyer. That's not my constitutional position. It's not to focus on my desire. Then earth, water, fire, vision, the most beautiful forms, 10 times more than fire, than air, sensual touch. You have to transcend that as a yogi, with desire. And then finally, ether, sound, the most incredible, pleasurable sounds. Of course, in ultimate spiritual life, they don't have to, in the path of bhakti, they don't have to be renounced. Because that's the path of renunciation. The path of bhakti is the path of dedication. So we can experience things as we experience them out of love. We can take prasadam, and we take the taste, but we experience out of love how that prasadam has pleased the senses of God. The devotee, the spiritual process of bhakti is the process of dedication. The sensual experience is there, but they don't contaminate the conscious. Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhar Swami. I got dropped ceremoniously. Anybody still there like to say hello?
Jai Maharaj, it's Rati Krishna.
Sorry, Krishna.
Okay, Rati. Gail, you're still there?
Yeah.
Keep away. Anybody else still there before we get to Gail's questions? Gail, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Well, for one thing, that was really a, you know, after you came back, like around 9:30, and it was, and the connection was good, that was such a wonderful, like, summary recap or comprehensive, you know.
Oh, thank you. Well,
it was really, it was really wonderful, you know.
I hope people were still on.
Yeah, actually, I want to listen to it again.
Yeah, Rati, if you could edit off maybe that first section before you put it online, that'd be okay if you can do that, you know? Or see what was there. Yeah, I, you know, I'm hearing Govardhan, and it's kind of inspiring, you know. I mean, I have this place. I'm only five-minute walk from the center there, which is a hubbub of wonderful spiritual activity. But I'm like in this quiet place. I mean, it's great. And I have a front and back. I have a little front yard, a little back porch, but it's all we call monkey barred in. You know, it's, you know, so I'm really, it's like far away from the outside world, and you know, facing Govardhan. And very, very clean, septic place, suitable for meditation. I got my library here now. And, you know, I'll have to go to Vrindavan because so many people are coming from the West. Devotees, non-devotees. And the word is out that I'm the one to take them around, so I do that kind of service. Okay, Gail, it was clear. Good.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I did have a question or two or three or five. But one was, the distress, bodily distress, you know, it promotes detachment. And so then why are the severe or, you know, the harsh distresses or austerities, I should say, discouraged? You know, you would think, well, the more austerities, you know, the better.
I didn't hear you. Discouraged because
why would the harsh austerities be discouraged? Since austerities promote detachment, because then you want to extract, you know, the mind from the
At least in the bhakti path, they can make the heart hard. And if the austerities are too harsh, the mind becomes disturbed rather than peaceful.
It becomes what?
Disturbed rather than peaceful.
Yeah.
If they're too harsh, it has to be prescribed according to your. But for the general people to perform the, you know, like Aranyakashipu and stand on one leg and have the anthill grow up and eat his flesh, it will make one disturbed. But just in general, just hard austerities, they'll disturb one. The whole idea is to take what you need for the higher purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and different people can perform different level of austerity. It depends on their condition. But the simple life, that's good for everyone.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, all these times that you were talking about going to the dentist, I didn't realize he didn't give you... What did you say, that you didn't have Novocaine, or they didn't have it yet, or what?
They didn't give Novocaine.
Wasn't it invented at that time?
Whatever it was, they just didn't give it. They didn't give it so quickly.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hey, Mr. Maharaj, Govardhan.
Govardhan, you're such a faithful hero. Yeah. Lakshmi Nisringa was down there, I heard. Huh?
Who was that?
Lakshmi Nisringa was fitted Edison in that area. He's a good friend of mine. Were you there when he came?
Oh, yeah. I went to... yes, Maharaj. I met him.
Some of his programs, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Okay, Hare Krishna. Panchakalpa through this sacrifice.